We are in a fight to preserve the constitutional freedoms to override the socialist agenda with the Out Loud Truth. From the heartland in flyover country, here are Chief Tom Jackson and Detective Dan Jackson.
What are we going to talk about today, Tom?
Well, I think you were kind of ranting a little while ago about a tweet that recently came out from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez regarding her trip to Denmark.
AOC tweeted out that, here's her tweet, spending the day in Denmark after C40, enjoying this social democracy that treats healthcare and education as rights, zero carbon as priority, and infrastructure as a key public good. Here's to another year of fighting for our future. Let's take apart that utopia. Let's talk about she and Bernie Sanders keep holding up Denmark as a paragon of democratic socialist virtue and a model of what the United States should be like, right? Everybody should get free healthcare and free education, and everybody's happy in Denmark, and everybody could be happy in the United States if we only went to that form of government and that form of funding healthcare and education. So let's talk about that stuff, okay? Denmark it promotes itself as a green pioneer, you know, and it scolds the rest of the world about our CO2 emissions, but it beats the United States and it beats every other country on Earth with its ecological footprint. According to an author named Michael Booth, he's a British journalist. He published a book called The Almost Nearly Perfect People Behind the Myth of the Scandinavian Utopia. He's a UK native, but he's lived in Scandinavia for over a decade, so he should know, right? And so he talks about Denmark beating the United States and virtually every other country on Earth in terms of its per capita ecological footprint. And they still burn a lot of coal. They still drive a lot of cars. Their country is home to the world's largest shipping company, Maersk. And they are the region's largest air hub. So hardly a paragon of what AOC calls, that hardly sounds like zero carbon, does it?
No, that sounds like a huge carbon footprint. And it certainly doesn't sound like they're steering towards zero carbon, which is not possible anyway. I mean, that's a silly assertion to make.
It is a silly assertion to make. How did she get to Denmark? Did she pedal her green bicycle or something? She was a paddle boat to get there, so she didn't have to fly in an airplane.
Well, she like a lot of the socialists that are coming up these days. Well, Bernie Sanders, for one, you know, he's been around a long, long time. He's gone from saying he's a communist, but now uses a social democracy meme to support his ideas. But again, he flies around the country in private jets.
Country club communist.
Yeah.
How many homes does he own?
Three, I believe.
How many fancy cars does he own?
Yeah.
And he's preaching to the rest of us about how we should pay higher taxes to support other people. Well, you first, Bernie.
Yeah, that's how these groups are. You know, Al Gore, for example, you know, the Earth in the Balance guy, who's been screaming the sky is falling for years, and yet back years ago, he built himself a ginormous mansion up in California and justified it by saying that he would buy carbon credits.
From himself, because he was the carbon credit king, wasn't he?
Yeah, some kind of scam going on there. I thought about getting on the internet and opening up a carbon credit business because they're a non-thing.
Yeah, so yeah.
They need to sell them. It's like selling air.
Yeah, we didn't get to it quick enough, though, because they created a carbon credit exchange, and you had to be a carbon credit exchange company to sell carbon credits, which is a joke. But it's like buying penance, you know? It's like the old church used to be that Martin Luther broke away from. You pay, you bring in money, and you buy penance. You know, it's exactly the same thing. I'll drive my car around and maybe I'll take an airplane trip. And then for my sins, I will pay for my penance. I'll buy some carbon credits from Al Gore.
Yeah. That's what I hate about it, is the hypocrisy.
Yeah.
You know, do as I say, not as I do.
Yep. And it's not just Denmark. I mean, Denmark, you know, she says, oh, they're zero carbon is a priority. And of course, you know, they're burning a lot of coal. They're driving a lot of cars. They got, we already talked about, they've got the world's largest shipping company, and they're the region's largest air hub. But Sweden is supposedly neutral, right? Not, hasn't been for a long time, but their economy benefits from its arms industry, which is one of the world's largest. And the Norwegians in Scandinavia, there they depend entirely too much. Their economy depends entirely too much on oil, so hardly zero carbon, right? But according to Mr. Booth, they've, quote, taken their foot off the gas in terms of work ethic. And now all young Norwegians want to do is to be, quote, something in the media or open a cupcake place.
That sounds lovely.
Doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'd like to open a cupcake place and be something in the media. I guess we're doing something in the media right now, aren't we? I
suppose we are. Might as well open up a
cupcake. Might as well open up a cupcake place. Cupcake. In Denmark.
In Denmark.
Or Norway. One of those places. So that's kind of crazy.
But you can't just move there, can you?
To Denmark? No, you can't just move to Denmark, because Denmark saw what the Sweden's open borders and their Muslim influx had done to them and to their economy, and in terms of violent crime and social disruption. They're sort of a closed little culture. They like themselves. They don't really like foreigners. They don't really like immigrants. If you're an American running away from the evil President Donald Trump, and you figure you move to Ocasio-Cortez's wonderful utopia of Denmark, yeah, not going to happen very easily, because you're going to wind up in, you might wind up in a refugee resettlement camp like they have there, or you might wind up, if you go there as a student, you're going to pay outrageous taxes. You're going to pay about $2,000 per course. And you still got to pay your American taxes unless you renounce your American citizenship. Their income tax in Denmark is outrageous. It's the top income tax bracket in Denmark is 56%. And you're going to be paying, if you're making $30,000 a year, you're going to have an income tax of about 32%, compared to 15% in the United States. And then you still got to pay your 25% sales tax on everything. If you're going to buy a car, a new car, you got an 85% tax in Denmark.
Wow.
It's hardly a wonderful cost to live, and hardly a utopian way to live. If you're making $75,000 a year, you're going to be paying upwards of 50% in income tax. There are no stay-home parents in Denmark. They're virtually unheard of anyway, because the cost of living is insane. So both parents have to work, and your kids wind up in a government-run daycare center, so that you can make ends meet. And they don't like foreigners anyway. They actually put out advertisements telling foreigners to stay away.
No, do they? Yeah. Well, I just read that they're shoring up their borders because of what happened in Sweden.
Yeah. Well, Sweden did the open borders thing. You know, all refugees are welcome. And this is what Ocasio-Cortez and Bernie Sanders and the other leftist idiots want for our country: open borders. Just open the borders and let people just swarm across without vetting them, without figuring out if they're really refugees or if they're invaders. You know, we should just open up the borders and give them everything, right? Take a look at Sweden. Sweden is in crisis. And the Swedish cops have been warning for a while that they've been encountering out of control Muslim refugee mobs in their cities that have been running rampant. They've been burning their cities. They've been raping women. They've been engaging in all kinds of violent crime. And Sweden's government is just now figuring out what the police have been warning them about for a while. And now they're trying to crack down. And it's kind of late for them to crack down, because they've let all these invaders in. Denmark sees it. Denmark wants none of it. But then, so how does AOC and how does Bernie Sanders and how do the rest of the leftist idiots, how do they reconcile their love of Denmark with Denmark's so-called xenophobia?
Well, they like the socialist part,
right?
So they're able to overlook that. But Ocasio-Cortez is proposing new legislation that she would call just society legislation.
Mm.
And part of that would be to have the Department of Health and Human Services, along with the Census Bureau, to adjust the federal poverty line to account for geographic cost variations, costs related to health insurance, work expenses, family child care, and new necessities like the internet. The American Enterprise Institute noted that if that standard were applied to New York City,
yeah,
that right now there's about 14% who meet the poverty level.
Yeah.
Under that standard, 40% of all households in New York would be considered impoverished.
And so then what?
Then what? Yeah.
Then they get government aid from themselves.
It's a plan that would virtually break the United States, cost trillions of dollars, and not solve any problems.
Yeah, and how would it? I mean, yeah, they're talking about free healthcare. The healthcare system in Denmark is horrible. It has the highest death rate from cancer, and it's because you have to wait in line. You know, because their healthcare system sucks. They got socialist healthcare. It's free, but you're paying for it by having to wait in line for healthcare.
I know we have the best healthcare anywhere, but it's a horrible system that we have here. But you don't fix it by making another horrible system, just like what happened with Obamacare.
Yep.
So there are lots of problems with, you know, health insurance and access to that. But Obamacare just... gave full power to health insurance companies.
Yeah.
Required everybody to purchase health insurance.
It's a socialist system based on that empowered the capitalist insurance companies.
I know, which is so directly in opposition to what he proposed to do.
It's inconceivable.
And what they proposed to do.
Yeah, and it was stupid. I retired and... retiree insurance was so expensive. We put my family on Obamacare. In the second year of Obamacare, the rates tripled. I couldn't afford it.
Right, yeah. I'm, retired, paying for health insurance. And, the Obama plans are outrageous.
Yeah.
If you actually have an income,
yeah,
then you don't qualify for the subsidies.
Yeah.
Which puts you down into... can put people down into a level where they would qualify for the subsidies because they're paying these exorbitant rates.
Yeah. I'm all for public health care. Everybody should be entitled to health care. But insurance is not health care.
No.
Insurance is a bet against yourself.
Yeah.
Or the insurance companies are betting you're going to stay healthy, and you're betting you're not. And that's no way to fix a health care system. That's no way to... create health care for all the way they proposed to with Obamacare.
Now, and all the models that they're looking at, that these social Democrats are looking at, are not effective in the big scheme of things.
Nope.
For the everyday health care needs of the citizens.
Yeah, it's not. And if they want to look at Denmark, like I said, Denmark has the highest death rate from cancer, and they have the lowest life expectancy in that region. So I guess their healthcare system's not all that great.
Sounds like something to shoot for.
Yeah, doesn't it? Well, that's probably what these socialists want. Have the old people die off so they got fewer people to pay for. But, and their education system, she says they treat healthcare and education as rights. So Denmark's education system, the quality is substandard. They're way down on the PISA, which is the European Program for International Student Assessment Educational Rankings. They're way down there. It's hardly a model education system.
And yet AOC seems to be the spokesperson for this this new group of politicians and social activists.
Yep.
And what experience does she have?
You know, none.
A couple of years ago, she was a
bartender.
Taco bartender.
Yeah.
Taco bar bartender. And, you know, a year later, she's trying to dictate policy to the United States. It's insanity.
Yeah. Well, I know I want to listen to her. I want to listen to what she has to say.
Well, it's amusing.
It is amusing. And it's frightening because she's a member of Congress and because she's
because people take her seriously.
And because her old man Echo, or the old man that she's echoing, Bernie Sanders, is still running for president. And I think if Hillary hadn't, the Clinton mafia, the DNC, hadn't meddled in the Democratic primaries last year, we'd have that commie for a president right now.
It's entirely
everybody
possible.
Was enamored of Bernie. He would have been the Democrat candidate instead of Hillary, and people would have bought into that stuff because, you know, bread and circuses.
Yep.
Food and entertainment.
There's a lot of millennials that were very upset that he didn't get the nomination, and especially that it was because Hillary cheated.
Yep.
And didn't vote for her, whereas they normally would have voted for the Democratic candidate.
If we go to that kind of government system, socialist, Democrat, well, let's just call it what it is, you know. Socialist, Marxist, communist, whatever they want. And we're paying for everything. We're going to have a huge welfare system. And what's going to sustain it? In Denmark, it's unsustainable. They're right now, their public sector's propped up by their dwindling oil revenues. And when their oil revenues continue to dwindle, like Norway's are, what's going to prop up their public sector? 40% of the jobs in Denmark are government jobs. 40% of the 40%. People in that company or in that country are working for the government.
Sounds more like Cuba to me.
Yep.
Where everybody works for the government.
It's kind of crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
And who's providing all the infrastructure? Who's providing all the private sector work? Who's providing all the cutting edge research? Who's providing all the oil? Who's providing all the other sources of energy?
You lose the incentive to...
What happens to your mom and pop stores?
Yeah. You lose the incentive to work. I mean, people could lose the incentive to work if there's really no incentive for working.
Well, you mean like just wanting to be something in the media or opening a cupcake store?
Sure. But innovation has to be rewarded.
Yep, it does. And it should. And if you suppress innovation, if you suppress exceptionalism in this country, if you suppress the drive to succeed, to excel, then what have you got? You get a bunch of sheep, of which the government is the shepherd, to quote, to paraphrase de Tocqueville when he was here in the 1840s. We should probably take a break, huh?
Let's go ahead and do that.
All right.
And we'll be back shortly.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older. Until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
All right, welcome back. I think we're just about done beating up Ocasio-Cortez. I got one more thing.
Okay.
She's praising the virtues of Denmark. We pointed out that they are have pretty much closed their borders to immigrants and made it very difficult for immigrants to have any kind of a useful life there. And the party that that seems to be in charge right now is the Danske Folk Party, the Danish People's Party. It's the second largest party in Denmark, and it is hostile to most forms of immigration. And there's an even more right-wing party called the New Conservatives that has pretty strong positions on immigration. And both those parties are led by women. And Denmark's largest party, the Social Democrats, is also increasingly opposed to immigration. So you've got the three strongest political parties in Denmark are all opposed to immigration. I just don't see how AOC can position herself as a champion of Denmark when it seems to be anathema to her position.
Well, that's ignorance. Yes, is the answer to that. She hasn't educated herself on the subject. She just pretty much is following the lead of Bernie Sanders,
who probably also hasn't been to Denmark. And if he has, he's just been as a tourist and he's seen all the fun stuff and thinks everything's wonderful because people seem happy, although they all have to work their butts off just to have any kind of happiness. I think the key to their happiness may be that that they find joy in the little things because they can't afford the big things.
Very possibly.
But it's cold there and they eat rotten fish. How can anybody have fun in Denmark? All right, beating up AOC enough. What do you got?
Well, tell you what, along that same line where, you know, these new Democratic presidential candidates are trying to whittle away at our civil rights, just recently Robert O'Rourke announced that if he was president, he would take away tax-exempt status from anyone who does not support gay marriage. Now, everybody has equal rights in this country as far as I'm concerned. I don't care at all what people do as long as it makes them happy and it doesn't hurt anybody. What does bother me is when someone like this can say, as the person in power, I will tell you what you can and cannot think, what you can and cannot believe. Freedom of religion was one of the main reasons this country was actually founded.
Yeah. So Robert O'Rourke would essentially take away that separation of church and state, and the state would dictate to churches what they can and cannot believe, and which parts of their scriptures are valid and which parts are not.
Yeah, we'd tell them they would have to actually support something that they didn't believe in.
You know? Yeah.
And you imagine going into all these mosques and synagogues and churches and give them a list of things that they must support.
Yeah.
There were air quotes there. That they must support in order to be in good graces with the government. And that's scary stuff when they start putting stuff out there like that. Sounds innocuous enough. You know, we want everybody to have the right to marry and the right to, you know, be an equal citizen. And that's laudable there. But to take away people's rights is not a function of the government.
No, it's not. And it's you know, religion is are organizations that people belong to it helps give them a path to the meaning of life, to how they should conduct themselves. It gives them some sense of history and some sense of purpose. And religions, like you said, this country was founded largely on the principle of freedom of religion.
Right. The Church of England was the church you had to belong to in England.
Yeah.
And that's why a lot of the British came to the United States, so they could freely practice Quakerism, for example.
Or Puritanism.
Yeah.
Or whatever they wanted to without being punished by the government, or Catholicism.
Yeah.
Without being punished by the government for failing to belong to the government's church. Henry VIII founded the Church of England because the Catholic Church didn't toe his line, so he founded his own church. And then English had to belong to his church or suffer punishment. Sounds like that's what Beto's trying to do here, doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't think he has any understanding. Of course, he's a burglar, but I don't think he has any understanding of what the Bill of Rights and the Constitution have laid out for this country. I don't think he understands.
I don't either. I don't think he has any damn idea. The First Amendment of the Constitution pretty much prohibits Beto from doing what he says he wants to do. It prevents government from making laws which respect an establishment of religion or prohibit the free exercise of religion. And so what he's talking about doing is government interfering with the free exercise of religion by discriminating against it, discriminating against religions that don't toe the party line. Now, gay marriage is legal in several states, and you know, some of our listeners may disagree with that, and that's okay, because that's what you believe.
Well, I think the Supreme Court has actually made that decision final.
Yeah, but the bottom line is that the government, judges, can perform civil marriages of gay people, and clergy can perform gay marriages if that does not conflict with their religious belief and their religious tenets. And that's good. But religions where that falls under the category of sin should not be compelled to toe the government line on it. And that's my thought.
Exactly. And we know people who are in same-sex marriages and relationships, yeah, and absolutely support them.
And they should have the same rights as the rest of us. They should be treated normally. They should be able to include their spouses as beneficiaries on their insurance, as family to visit them in the event of hospitalization when they're not responsive and can't make their own decisions. They should be included as normal family. But that doesn't mean the government should dictate what religions can and cannot believe.
Yeah, that's the thing that bothers me is the chipping away at the Constitution.
Yeah, well, that's what they're doing.
Which they seem to be doing in a lot of ways. Beto's the one who said he was going to take away our guns.
Yeah, and their violent paramilitary arm, the Social Democrats, their Antifa, goes out and disrupts peaceable assembly. And again, the First Amendment prevents the government from abridging freedom of speech or the freedom of the press or a right to peaceably assemble. And these people are peaceably assembling, and violent leftists are invading those assemblies and hurting people, disrupting those assemblies. They're shutting down freedom of speech. They're shutting down the First Amendment. They're shutting down the Second Amendment. They're shutting down Beto's, we're going to take your guns, we're going to invade your houses. Okay, there's Amendment. The Fourth Amendment. Okay, what's next? Fifth Amendment? Tenth Amendment? Where does it go? All right, let's move on from the deterioration of our constitutional rights. You've got something you wanted to talk about in honor of Columbus Day, yes?
Well, looking at the debate on Columbus Day. So it's recognized as a national holiday. However, only 21 states recognize it as a state holiday. And some states are even moving to change, or have done so, change the name of Columbus Day to Indigenous Peoples Day or Native Americans Day. Yeah. And so I just want to talk about how that evolved and that whole story came about. The story of Christopher Columbus getting Queen Isabella to fund his mission to find a path around the world to Asia.
Right.
He was one of the people of the day that wanted to prove that the world was round and not flat, as right. was widely thought.
It's still apparently thought by some people. I had somebody approach me in a restaurant yesterday and handed me a flyer on why the earth is really flat and why the government's lying to us.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. She didn't have an answer when I asked her how come, Copernicus and Galileo discovered things that were contrary to that long before the existence of the United States. And she didn't have an answer because U.S. government wasn't around to lie to us then. But I digress. I told her that I knew for a fact that the world was not flat. Do you know how I know? And she says, how? And I said, because if the earth was flat, cats would have pushed everything off the edge already.
Absolutely true.
So, okay, I'm sorry, I digressed.
Oh, no, that's interesting. But anyway, he actually landed in the Caribbean.
Right.
And set up shop there and, you know, eventually created trade routes that brought the Europeans to the Caribbean and eventually to the United States, the Spanish,
yeah,
of course, and conquistadors.
And sadly.
Yeah. Now, Columbus's mission here started what ultimately became Western civilization. So that's a very good thing. Western civilization has done a lot of good for the world, as it continues to do.
Yes.
But once you dredge up the history of, you know, once you dredge up the history of Columbus's mission or work in this part of the world, you see some brutality.
Yeah.
And, you know, slave taking, bringing of disease into the Caribbean. So at some point, the indigenous people revolted against Spanish rule,
right,
which brought a brutal, you know,
suppression
by Columbus, resulted in the deaths of a lot of indigenous people and
virtual annihilation of the Taino people. Yes.
Yeah. Just about. As a matter of fact, in the 60 years since Columbus landed, their population went from around 250,000 to a few thousand in just 60 years. So the voyage, the landing, their tactics and what they did.
It was typical European colonization and violent suppression of indigenous cultures.
Sure.
It's what the Europeans were good at.
Yeah. And so you can see why once the history comes out, it's more better studied, that especially indigenous people would be offended by Columbus Holiday.
But Christopher Columbus did discover a sailing route to the Americas that was previously unknown to Europeans. He explored the coasts of South and North America, as well as the Bahamas and Cuba and the island of Hispaniola. And so he opened up a whole part of the world that was closed to Europeans up to that point. We can argue whether that was a good or a bad thing, but the United States is still the best country in the world. And for all of our dark moments, we've done a lot for the world.
Yeah. And actually, ultimately, Columbus was arrested for mismanagement and brutality,
right,
and he died broke.
Yeah.
The question is, do we undo that holiday?
Do we? Do we undo that holiday? Why? Why do we undo it?
Well, personally, I don't think that we should.
I don't either. We can add.
We can add
an Indigenous Day, and we should, because Indigenous Americans were, you know, true to European culture and European ethic, and even after this became the United States, they were driven to reservations. They were brutalized. They were suppressed. And tribes still live on reservations to this day and still struggle with full integration into the United States. And there should be an Indigenous Day. But that doesn't mean we should take away Columbus Day. We shouldn't minimize his accomplishments.
No, rather we should recognize our faults as well as our accomplishments as a developing nation. We should understand our history, learn from our history, make sure that those horrible parts of our history are not repeated. We still want to recognize the positive, the good, right, that was done because of these voyages.
Yeah. There's a lot of good that came of it, as well as bad. And erasing history or pretending that it doesn't exist doesn't make it go away. You know, the old saying is that those who don't learn from history are condemned to repeat it.
Right. And I think that's the folly in taking down the Columbus Day statues and doing away with the Columbus Day holiday, as well as the others. Now there's people who want to take down statues of Washington and Jefferson, the founders, you know.
Yeah.
People that won the freedom for the American people from the oppressive British Empire. Yeah.
Well, it's part of the demoralization effort of the left. It was put in play. Here I go, the guy in the desert in the hair shirt, you know, crying out in the wilderness again. But it was part of the plan to conquer the United States without firing a shot for Marxism that was put in play when there was still a Soviet Union. Andropov's so-called special measures, active measures, and they infiltrated our educational institutions and our media, and now we're seeing the fruits of that. Even though there's no longer Soviet Union per se, there is still the fruits of their labor, and part of that is demoralization of Americans. We knock down their heroes. We make everything that is patriotic and that is good seem horrible, and it's a dangerous trend.
Yeah, you see it more and more with young people saying they're not proud to be an American.
That's exactly right. That's what's happening. It's the demoralization. It's a terrible thing. I hate to see it. Do you know that there is no known authentic portrait of Columbus? All these pictures we see of Columbus, all the statues, they're all guesswork. Nobody actually knows what he looked like.
How about that?
There are no official portraits of him.
Well, you know, and as Columbus Day was coming up, I was reading up on some of the history of the man, and I read one article, an Associated Press article by Russell Contreras, and he said that Columbus was mostly an unknown figure in the English-speaking world until Washington Irving wrote a 1828 book called The History of the Life and Voyages of Christopher Columbus, which romanticized him, and that's what made him a popular hero. And it wasn't actually until sometime around the 1860s that Italian and Irish immigrants started celebrating Columbus Day in local parades.
Yeah.
Up until then, you know, he really wasn't much of an historic figure for the United States. He was more of a Spanish celebrated celebrity.
Well, a good chunk of the United States was originally Spanish colony, but that's funny. Why would the Irish celebrate Columbus Day?
I don't know, but they did.
That's interesting. Well, nobody knew what he looked like, and there is a debate over where his remains actually rest. He died in Spain, and his remains were interred in Seville in a church by the will of his son, Diego Colón, who had been the governor of Hispaniola. And then his remains were transferred to Santo Domingo, which is present-day Dominican Republic. 1795, France took over the entire island of Hispaniola, so his remains were moved to Havana. And then in 1898, when Cuba became independent following the Spanish-American War, his remains were moved back to Seville, supposedly. So now there are remains resting in Seville in the cathedral, but there are also remains in Santo Domingo, in the Dominican Republic, that the people there claim are his remains. So there's a dispute over whether he's actually buried or laid to rest. He's not buried, but whether he's laid to rest in Spain or in the Dominican Republic.
And since he was originally from Genoa, which is Italy,
yeah,
it's interesting.
He's an Italian, maybe a pirate. They said. He might have originally been an Italian pirate. Then he sought funding for his trip to the Indies to find a spice route, and the Spanish gave it to him after much argument and much discussion.
Of course, you know, Columbus is credited with discovering America.
Right.
But there's a thought in Norway, we were talking about them earlier, that it was actually the Vikings that discovered the American mainland.
Yeah, there's evidence for that. There's archaeological evidence. They did, in fact, land in North America about 500 years before Columbus did. And Columbus didn't actually land in North America. He landed in the Caribbean. We don't celebrate Leif Erikson Day.
We don't.
Why not? They celebrate it in Bikini Bottom. SpongeBob celebrates Leif Erikson Day, doesn't he?
Do they?
But SpongeBob, according to an idiot professor, I'm sorry, according to a professor at the University of Washington, SpongeBob is a representation of white racist colonizers, violent colonizers.
Stop it.
And this really? goofball went on to describe how SpongeBob represented the American mistreatment of the Marshallese people and the destruction of the Bikini Atoll with our atom bomb tests. And so SpongeBob is clearly a representation of all of that white racist colonist mentality.
Okay. That's digging deep.
Yeah.
Digging deep. Okay.
It's digging deep. I don't know whether to laugh or feel sorry for her. I mean, she must be angry at the world. She hates SpongeBob. Did her parents not love her?
Apparently not.
Was she left in a garbage can for adoption? Or what the hell's wrong with her? Oh, well, I digress.
I got nothing on that.
So Leif Erikson Day. We don't celebrate Leif Erikson Day. Maybe we should have a Leif Erikson Day.
Why not?
Why not? Or maybe it wasn't him. Maybe it was his dad, Eric the Red. Maybe we should have an Eric the Red Day.
Well, on that note, I think probably we should wrap this up for this segment. And right. We'll be back soon.
Yes, we will.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
We got Del Wilber with us. Del is, as you may know, a former CIA intelligence officer. He spent a lot of time in the Middle East and got some unique insights into that area. So, Del, let's talk about what's going on in Syria right now.
Well, what's going on is the red line in the sand that Barack Obama drew, you know, several years ago. Yeah. Apparently, wasn't worth a hell of a lot. So
when he backed up from it, as soon as he got crossed.
Yeah, that one. Yeah. So no, I mean it's obviously a difficult situation, and you know the Turks have long considered that area to be a vulnerability for them because of the concern about the Kurds who they view as terrorist organization. And in fact, our State Department has also identified the PKK as a terrorist organization. So, you know, it's not as though the Turks are, you know, are viewing it, you know, in a wrong way, but certainly what is happening has garnered a lot of attention, both internationally as well as, you know, politically here domestically. So, yeah, it's definitely a difficult situation.
Yeah, there's a lot of misconception out there that all Kurds are the same, and of course they're not. And the YPG that we allied ourselves with is sort of a sister organization, I guess, to the PKK, and they're communist in origin, and we allied with them simply because they were the only ones that would help us fight ISIS. Correct.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And you know, people need to understand that the Kurds that we're talking about are not the same Kurds that worked with us side by side in Iraq before and during the invasion of Iraq and afterwards. We're not talking about the same group of individuals. So, you know, it's a completely different animal, so to speak. And you know, we've got to do what is in our nation's interest. And You know, they, I've heard some of the criticism that, well, we've abandoned, you know, allies on the field of battle, and that's not the case. You know, for one thing, you know, we had a very limited amount of troops there in the first place who were there primarily providing both logistical and advisory support to the Kurds during the effort against ISIS. So, you know, it's not necessarily our place to be remaining there and getting involved in a conflict between those Kurds and the Turks. It just, it doesn't make sense.
I tend to agree with you there, Del. But there's been a lot of criticism from all over the place about the manner in which the troop withdrawal happened. I mean, do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, Trump, President Trump basically gave notice about a year ago, you know, that we were going to be doing this. And, you know, I too question, you know, the thing that I kind of compare it to in a sense, I think is what, or actually what I think it's being compared to is if you recall back, prior to the, Saddam Hussein's invasion of, Kuwait, when our ambassador apparently was somewhat ambiguous in response to his aggression towards Kuwait before he actually invaded. And, which kind of put in his mind that the United States, was not committed to doing anything about it. And I think that's kind of what's being compared to President Trump's telephone call with Erdogan from Turkey, you know, right before this whole thing started. They're kind of looking at it that maybe, it was viewed as a tacit agreement on the part, you know, of the United States that, you know, we would not do anything to, you know, to stop this, this incursion. And I really don't think it's fair to compare the two, but I think that's some of what's going on.
Yeah. It's being widely presented that way in the media. It's, I've heard that little sound bite several times today already on Fox radio, you know, that, a phone call from President Trump to Erdogan was immediately followed by Erdogan's invasion of Syria. And they make it sound like that was Trump calling him and saying, okay, go ahead. And that's not the case.
To me, it's Trump just saying, this is what I've said I was going to do. You know, this was part of my campaign, part of which got me elected president. I was going to start bringing troops to places they don't belong. And I think, you know, the reason he probably did it, what it sounds like on his own decision, is because everybody around him was telling him we should stay there indefinitely. And that's not what he wanted to hear.
No. And the thing people need to understand too is we haven't left Syria. I mean, we still have troops in Syria. What we've done is pulled back a couple of dozen advisors from this area that, that Turkey, has invaded into. So it's not like we've, you know, just completely packed up and left the Middle East. We still have troops in Iraq. We still have troops in Syria, and you know, we certainly have an interest in trying to maintain a presence, you know, in that part of the world. So I think a lot more is being made out of this. Now, I will say this about Turkey: Erdogan is really, as far as I'm concerned, no friend of the United States. I mean, he is a hardcore Islamist.
Right.
He's a supporter of the Muslim Brotherhood. And he certainly is not someone that, you know, that we should put a lot of, we should rely on a lot. In fact, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, and I've said this for quite a while, we need to just pack up and move out of Turkey. You know, they're unreliable as an ally anyway. You know, I think there are some other countries who would welcome an American presence and who would be a much more reliable ally than what Turkey has been.
Yeah, I'm concerned because of who Erdogan is. I'm concerned about the fact that we have significant strategic assets at Incirlik. I just don't.
Oh, think absolutely.
Well, we should not let them into NATO.
No, should never let them into NATO.
Now, I mean, that was a decision that was made, you know, decades ago. You know, the decision was made at the time because they served as a strategic counter to the then Soviet Union, and because of their geographic location. And obviously we've seen that with this new regime under Erdogan, they have certainly had been involved in some questionable decisions, particularly most recently in buying weaponry from Russia. So, you know, that alone calls into question their reliability as a member of NATO.
Yeah, I think we're kind of screwed either way. You know, Syria saddling up to Russia, and now we've got Turkey saddling up to Russia, and it's not good for us.
Well, it's an odd mix because the Russians have put troops there now along where the Kurds are. And
the Russians have, they're going to play, you know, play this game all the way to the end, because they have some strategic interests definitely in the area. And the other thing that people need to look at is, you know, Russia has long, or Vladimir Putin has long been interested in driving a wedge through Turkey and NATO. And in fact, he would love to see NATO as an organization basically disappear. And so this is an opportunity that he is definitely going to look to take advantage of and see if he can cause a separation. And and in my mind, as I said, I don't necessarily think it's such a bad idea, because Erdogan's not going to be going anywhere anytime soon, and Turkey's not reliable. And like I said, I would just as soon let's withdraw our forces from Turkey and deploy them elsewhere where we've got a better relationship and where someone is our ally is going to be more reliable.
Yeah, I think Erdogan is helping Putin drive the wedge. He's requesting NATO help for his invasion of Syria. The translated quote is, "We are a NATO ally. They need to stand by us, and we're imposing sanctions instead." And they're not a reliable NATO ally, and it just kind of makes NATO look like a useless piece of paper. I mean, they're a NATO ally, but we're not going to support them.
Well, you know, NATO as an organization has certainly not lived up to its promise. The United States has been the main player in NATO, you know, basically going back to its founding as an organization. You know, it was United States troops, you know, in West Germany that prevented and protected the West and prevented the Soviet Union from, you know, from taking over most, if not all, of Europe. You know, it's been the United States as the leader of that organization, both in manpower, in troop strength, as well as in funding. I mean, the United States has carried the burden. So, yeah. You know, it's time for NATO to get off their butts and start being more of a real partner in defending Europe.
Yeah, I don't see it happening.
Yeah, but that's one of the things that the president's been demanding since he got into office. You know, he called them out on their lack of commitment financially and militarily.
Yeah, he's been you know, giving it to them, and in some respect, he's had some success, because a number of the NATO nations that have agreed to to start meeting their obligation, but there's been resistance because of the fact that they've never been held accountable before by a previous administration. Right. You've got a president now who's saying, "Hey, you guys pay your own share. The United States is not going to carry the burden of defending your continent anymore. You know, you've got to start, you know, participating." And they're just, you know, they've got spoiled over the years.
Yeah, it's about damn time.
Yeah,
it took us long enough. One of my thoughts, though, about the pulling the troops back. Now, granted, we only pulled back a handful of troops. Of course, 50 Green Berets is like, you know, 200 normal troops, right? But
a little bit more than that.
Yeah, but pulling them back, we probably should not have entered into that "help us and we'll protect you" agreement with the YPG Kurds, but we did. and now we're treating them the way we treated the Montagnards, you know, in Vietnam. We'll help you. We'll back you. We'll take care of you. Nah, no, we won't. We're moving. See you later.
Well, the Montagnards in Vietnam were a different thing. I mean, yeah, we abandoned them. I'm not disputing that fact, but they weren't the same. I mean, the Kurds that we're talking about are not, I mean, they're not ideologically, right. They're not in tune with the United States. So, you know, they're, like I said, and plus, I think the fact that that we withdrew these troops in that wasn't, you know, it wasn't such a big slap in the face to them as it's being portrayed. You know, I think they always knew that we eventually were going to be withdrawing our troops. It's just the way that it happened, or the way that it's been portrayed in the, you know, the anti-Trump news media, you know, has made it seem to be much more of a, you know, a strategic blunder or whatever they want to call it than what it really is.
Yeah, well, they've run to Assad. We pulled out, so they've turned to Assad, and that's not a good thing either.
No, but it's, you know, they're not going to they're not going to Assad is not going to go to war with Turkey. You know, for one thing, I mean, Russia is not going to allow it because, like I said, they're, you know, they've got interest in Syria, but they're also much more, I think, interested in seeing what they can do. You know, with Turkey vis-a-vis their, you know, their relationship with NATO and the United States. So, yeah, I think the Russians will try to keep a lid on things. And so it's going to simmer over there. It's going to continue to simmer as it has for a long time.
Assad sent troops north to counter what he called Turkish aggression. So there is some, if there's not some hostility there, they're portraying hostility.
Yeah, a lot of moving parts, but again, I don't think that the Russians are going to allow it to you know, become an outright shooting war between Syria and Turkey. For one thing, I mean, you know, Turkey has a pretty strong military, much more capable than what the Syrians.
Yeah, they do.
Oh, sure, and I don't think Russia wants to take sides between Syria and Turkey. I think they want them both.
Absolutely. Like, as I said, that's what they're wanting to do is to maintain their alliance with Syria, but also forge a new alliance with Turkey. And they're not going to be able to do that if they let them come to a blows. So,
well, listen, Del, thanks for popping in on us. We're about run out of time here, so we're going to have to wrap it on up.
My pleasure. Always a pleasure.
It's good to get your take on this stuff.
Good talking to you, Del.